They've won tens of millions of dollars from New York City. They were exonerated. What would it mean for you to settle this lawsuit?
Well, you know, it's principle. And the quote that I was thinking of, my father, he said, oh, gosh, every time I want to say it, so maybe I'm not supposed to say it, right?
Well, I bet you're going to say it tonight, and we're going to record it and play it on Democracy Now! In the coming days.
Okay. And, you know, one word that I can recall growing up with hearing from my mother is the word surveillance. Surveillance. And so I think of how traumatized, how how my mother must have been traumatized at such a young age to experience and live through all of this, my father being such a young man, you know. And so we most definitely want to ensure that we get justice for our father. You know, he sacrificed his entire self. He said, we demand our human rights as your brother. There is no asking. We demand our human rights as ordained by God. And I would imagine it's the reason why there is this reverence for this young man whose legacy continues to inspire, empower, uplift people all around the world.
You're wearing all white today. Not black, to remember your father, the fact that he was assassinated, but white. Why?
Oh, you know, it's, you know, the spirituality. It's just a bunch of things. And I love my father. I love my mother so much. And, you know, whatever I can do to keep these legacies alive and thriving and, you know.
And tonight you'll be at the Audubon Ballroom, which your mother fought to save from destruction when Columbia was building its big biotech building. And there you have so many events honoring Malcolm X and Dr. Betty Shabazz.
And I want to say that my mother turned this place of tragedy into a place of triumph.
Dr. Ilyalsa Shabazz, on the 100th anniversary of the birth of Malcolm X. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. This month's Development Committee meeting will be held on Wednesday, May 28th at 5:30 p.m. This will be a hybrid meeting. It will be held at the station, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, and online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Support for KBOO comes from KBOO members and Grendel's Coffee Shop, located at East Burnside and 8th Avenue in Portland, featuring coffee, tea, sandwiches, and more. Information at grendelspdx.com.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, the Oregon May special election will close tomorrow, Tuesday, May 20th.
City councilors are attempting to soften the $93 million Portland budget shortfall.
And tolls on the new I-5 bridge will start later than expected.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Monday, May 19th, 2025. I'm Sherry Meredith.
And I'm Dave Johnson. Oregon is holding the May special election tomorrow, Tuesday, May 20th. May special elections for this odd number year will elect representatives for local districts such as school boards, water districts, and transportation districts. This year, voters will determine directors for the Centennial School District, the David Douglas School District, Multnomah Education Service District, Park Rose School District, and Portland Public Schools. Voters will also be deciding on a renewal of the Portland Public School bond. The PPS bond would fund critical repairs and seismic upgrades that many teachers from the Portland Association of Teachers demanded from Portland Public Schools in the 2023 PAT strike. Anyone in Oregon can vote by mail. However, since Election Day is tomorrow, Secretary of State Tobias Reed says that at this point, it is best to drop ballots off at a drop site to ensure that your vote gets counted. Secretary of State Tobias Reed said in a statement, quote, "We're going to determine who's running schools, how we're going to fill potholes, and how we're fighting fires," unquote. Ballot boxes and drop sites are open until 8 p.m. on Tuesday.
Portland's facing a $93 million budget shortfall, and Mayor Wilson's proposed budget makes big cuts to the parks and permitting departments. City councilors are proposing amendments to try and lessen the blow on these cuts. Councilors Mitch Green and Jamie Dunphy have an amendment that would zero out the grant normally given to Prosper Portland each year. That would save some $11 million that could go towards parks maintenance and keeping some city workers who are scheduled to be laid off. Prosper Portland is the city's economic development arm. It used to be called the Portland Development Commission. Prosper is a quasi-governmental agency, meaning the city council is in charge of their budget, but they report to different board of directors who aren't elected by the people. Portland is in a fragile economic situation, so why do councilors want to cut Prosper's funding? Dunphy and Green propose that Prosper use some of its $50 million strategic fund to keep its programs going, just for this year, since money is so tight. Prosper Portland and its allies in the business community are pushing back, saying it's the wrong move at a critical time. The amendment also comes as councilors are pushing for more oversight into Prosper's work and their strategy for development in Portland.
Portland City Councilor Candace Avalos also has a pitch to try to soften some of the drastic cuts. Avalos' amendment would reduce the police staffing budget by nearly $2 million. She also proposed putting 75% of the overtime budget for the police and fire bureaus into a council-controlled fund. Both of those bureaus have had huge overtime costs in recent years, in the $20 million range. That would avert cutting some of the parks maintenance staff who were on the chopping block. Avalos isn't the only one looking at the police budget as something to shift. Councilor Steve Novick proposed moving $2.6 million out of the police bureau by not sending officers to do welfare checks, instead sending public safety specialists. Novick said in a press release that he doesn't like cutting the police budget, but, quote, "I don't think parks should bear all the cuts," end quote. There are other plans, too. Councilor Eric Zimmerman wants to cut the urban forestry regulation team down to 5 workers instead of the 37. Councilor Mitch Green floated the idea of borrowing from the Portland Clean Energy Fund to shore up some of the budget deficit. These budget amendments will be discussed at city council meetings this Wednesday, starting at 9 a.m.
Policing, spending, and accountability are being considered by different levels of government in Oregon right now. The state legislature is considering a bill to broadly expand the ways police can use drones on the public. Portland Mayor Keith Wilson proposes giving Portland police a spending boost in the deficit budget as other programs are cut. KBOO reporter Dejan hit the streets of Portland to ask locals for thoughts.
How are Oregonians feeling about police budgets and accountability? Statewide, Oregon lawmakers are proposing a bill that would give police more power to use drones with less restrictions. Locally, Portland City's budget is undergoing shaky adjustments, but police are getting a spending boost. We wanted to hear what some folks in Portland thought about this.
The state of Oregon is now considering passing a bill that would expand the use of drones by police. Right now, police can use drones only if they have a warrant and for search and rescue situations. The bill, SB 238, would allow drones to be used without a warrant by police and is already in the House chamber, halfway to becoming a law. Would you support the bill and why?
I would not support the bill. The reason why is because it puts a lot of people in danger. Different skin tones, you know, we get judged for every little thing that we do. And if we're being watched 24/7, every little mistake that we make will be deemed wrong and evil and worthy of being imprisoned, really. And I don't think that's right. People have the right to privacy.
Absolutely not. Not having a warrant to use that footage, like, means you can low-key, like, get around the fact that you can't technically record someone without, like, their consent. They'll be flying them, like, right outside your bedroom window. Like, it's creepy, yo. And I don't think it's, one, ethical, or two, like, something that's legitimately useful to solving crime, rather than it just being another tool to, like, further oppress people. I don't know, it pushes the boundaries of what they can and cannot do with certain things. Bro, they already do sting operations, like watching people on top of buildings. Why do you need a drone for that? Like,
no, I would not. The reason being is because that's a violation of your rights as an American, I feel like. And I feel like a lot of people would agree with me. Because what do I look like once someone just spying on me all the time? Or just barging into my home through a drone, like through the window or something, and being like, hey, we got you doing this. Like, no, bro. That is definitely a violation of your rights.
I think I would need more information, but off the bat, not necessarily no, just because I think it could be used for like illegal purposes, and I just wouldn't necessarily trust the police department to always act in the right way.
Probably not. Yeah, I already feel like we have too many security issues when it comes to, you know, keeping your life private, especially within the United States as of now. I understand it's probably easier for the police departments to be able to enforce law if they don't physically have to be there, but I also think that's an issue because it doesn't feel like our tax dollars are going towards funding and supporting actual physical human beings being in spaces where they can protect and serve the people that they're supposed to be protecting and serving. So flying a drone around to spy on a bunch of people to find problems seems more problematic to me than having boots on the ground and actually helping those people out.
Portland is facing a budget shortfall, and the mayor has proposed big cuts to departments like parks and permitting. Portland police weren't subject to cuts. They will be getting a spending boost, which the mayor wants them to spend on hiring more officers, so they'll spend less on overtime. What do you think about this? Is it important to prioritize hiring more police officers in Portland?
The budget cuts are definitely, it does suck because there are a lot of people in need, children in need of parks, safe parks, you know, places to be that are clean and healthy for them, but more police. I mean, if they're good people, you know, because I feel like all the police, they just have this complex of, I'm a god, like, I'm above you, I can do what I want. And there's a lot of police that get away with a lot of stuff because they're in power. And there are women that have been abused, colored women that have been abused by police because they can get away with it. And since we're women of color, nobody's gonna listen to us. So I don't know. I don't know about that. That one's a tough one.
Absolutely not. There's also been major cuts to like house assistance programs. We literally have enough apartments in the city to house every single homeless person, and then some. Like, a lot of people end up in like harm's way too, like during like police investigations, shakedowns and stuff. I think it's definitely more important to just like give people, you know, what they need.
It is good to have more police because it is a big city, so you're going to need more coverage, because obviously if you have a small unit or not enough, then you're not going to be able to get to all the crime in the city because it's a big city to cover. But also at the same time, why are you going to make this city more ran down when there's already enough police? Because I see police all over the place, literally not one street I don't see a cop. So why are you going to deteriorate the city even more than it already is? But that's in my opinion.
I mean, I think it depends on who those officers are, just because I think if it's like meant to help a community that may be like over policed in the past, or a community that's like underfunded, I think sometimes more police officers that understand their issues could be helpful. However, I think that if you're just like hiring officers that don't necessarily like understand what the people in a specific community are going through, I think it could cause more harm than good. And so I would just need more information before I can make like a really strong position on that. But
if you're gonna increase or keep your spending the same, I think it needs to be funneled more directly to solving some of the issues within the police department, not necessarily hiring more individuals, but maybe fixing the things that the individuals we have can't seem to take care of in of itself.
And that was what some folks in Portland had to say about Senate Bill 238 and how the mayor of Portland plans to shift the city's budget. For KBU News, I'm Dejan.
Tolling on the Interstate 5 bridge across the Columbia River will start a year later than planned. And drivers using the bridge may pay a little more than originally forecast as a result. Tolling in both directions on the existing bridge will begin once construction of a replacement bridge gets underway. It's going to be used to help cover the cost of the project, which could range from $5 billion to $7.5 billion. Now project managers say tolling won't start until the summer of 2027. Several possible rate scenarios are under review. That include one-way rates ranging from $1.55 to $4.70, with higher pricing during peak travel times. Officials with the Interstate Bridge Replacement Program say they expect to get a key federal approval known as Amended Record of Decision in early 2026. That is needed before construction-related contracts can be issued. Construction itself is expected to begin sometime in 2026. Based on that schedule, planners now anticipate cars could use the new bridge in 2032 or 2033. Construction would last at least 10 to 15 years through the 5-mile corridor on either side of the bridge.
You're listening to the KBU Evening News. Stay tuned after the newscast for an in-depth interview with queer filmmaker Tom Hilton about an upcoming screening of four of his short films at the Clinton Street Theater on June 1st. At 6, it's Labor Radio. At 6:30, it's Prison Pipeline. Then at 7, Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather will be cloudy with an overcast low, or with an overnight low of 50 degrees. Tomorrow, those clouds continue with a high of 60. Today in history, in 1930, American playwright Lorraine Hansberry was born, and she's best known for her play A Raisin in the Sun. And she was the first African-American female author to have a play performed on Broadway. The quote of the day is from Hansberry in A Raisin in the Sun, quote, "Just sit a while and think. Never be afraid to sit a while and think."
Five bills backed by consumer rights advocates passed the first chamber deadline in Salem. The bill would protect Oregonians from predatory business practices. Isabel Charlet has more on the story.
Consumer rights advocates are celebrating five bills that passed the first chamber deadline in Salem, moving closer to becoming law. The bills are supported by the Consumer Alliance of Oregon, a coalition of 18 advocacy groups spanning housing, healthcare, and other sectors. The bills mark the alliance's first legislative push to protect Oregonians from predatory business practices. Daisy Bedoya Sotelo of the alliance highlighted one bill that would rein in hospital facility fees and require transparent patient billing.
Right now, you go and seek care, and then you get home and get the bill, and it's surprising that it could be up to hundreds or even thousands of dollars in facility fees.
Another bill would bring the state's insurance sector under Oregon's Unlawful Trade Practices Act. The change would help ensure that insurance companies, including auto, health, and housing, do not deny claims unfairly. Currently, insurance is the only major Oregon industry not subject to the law. On a federal level, House Republicans are considering reducing the funding for the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, the agency responsible for shielding Americans from predatory lending practices and fraud. Ethan Livermore, also with the Alliance, says Oregon lawmakers need to step up and fill in the gaps.
With so much uncertainty at the federal level, I think Oregon legislators have a really amazing opportunity to make sure that Oregonians are protected.
Other bills backed by the Alliance would shield Oregonians from medical debt harming their credit scores and guarantee fair rates when buying a car. Bedoya Sotelo emphasizes that since everyone is a consumer, consumer protections should be a nonpartisan issue.
It doesn't matter where you live, you are being affected by all of these issues. Oftentimes, we don't think about them until it happens to us.
I'm Isabel Charlet, Oregon News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Former President Joe Biden is diagnosed with aggressive prostate cancer. The FBI says the explosion at a Palm Springs fertility clinic was terrorism. And Western hunters and anglers oppose sale of federally managed public lands. With more on these stories, it's Alex Gonzalez with 2025 Talks.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Prostate cancer is really a hormone-driven type of cancer. And what hormone therapy does is it essentially targets those hormones that are feeding the tumor, feeding the cancer. The goal is to shrink it in size.
Emergency medicine physician Dr. Stephanie Widmer tells ABC News hormone therapy is the likely treatment for former President Joe Biden's aggressive prostate cancer. Doctors say the disease is not a death sentence, but Biden is still at risk of it growing and spreading. President Donald Trump wished Biden a fast and successful recovery on social media. Democrats are reeling from several new books reexamining Biden's acuity and fitness, saying his inner circle hid the issues late in his presidency. Virginia Congresswoman Jennifer McClellan says while she's advocated for Biden, it's more important now to defend Medicaid and due process rights.
I have honestly not had time to think about Joe Biden because I am focused on dealing with the issues that my constituents have raised to me since January 20th.
The FBI says 25-year-old Guy Edward Bartkus was the primary suspect and the only fatality in a terrorist bombing outside a California fertility clinic. The company says none of its staff was injured and no reproductive material was lost. Israel is expanding ground operations in Gaza amid ceasefire talks, but is now allowing in more aid. Russia is launching intense drone strikes on Ukraine, blunting hopes as Trump is set to talk by phone with President Vladimir Putin. In a blow to the Trump administration, the Supreme Court is blocking it from using the Alien Enemies Act to restart migrant deportations. Republican House leadership says they're still confident about the big budget package in spite of it failing in committee. Republican Representatives Mark Amadei of Nevada and Celeste Malloy of Utah introduced a last-minute amendment to it, allowing the sale of hundreds of thousands of acres of public lands in those states. Backers say it could help address the housing shortage and reduce the deficit. Devin O'Dea with Backcountry Hunters and Anglers says the unpopular giveaway to energy companies and developers was timed to avoid scrutiny.
Democracy is founded on having a difference of opinion and discussing it and then voting and moving forward.
Finally, Texas voting rights advocates are speaking out against legislation requiring people who want to register and some who already have prove their citizenship. Amy Mills with Move Texas Civic Fund says non-citizens vote fraud all but never happens, but Senate Bill 16 would be a barrier to legitimate voters.
When you're completing a voter registration form, you do also have to submit either your driver's license number or your social security number. And that's really important because that is how the state verifies who you are.
I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacific Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Disproportionate numbers of Native kids in Montana are in foster care. A nonprofit in Lodgegrass is helping to stop separation of tribal families and keep kids out of social services. Studies show extreme heat can cause climate change that affects the health of pregnant mothers. Kids are learning Navajo through a new children's television show, Navajo Highways. With these stories and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Montana's Native families face higher rates of separation, with a disproportionate number of Native kids in foster care. A nonprofit in Lodgegrass is developing a center aimed at keeping tribal families together and out of social services. Montana Public Radio's Victoria Traxler has more.
Mountain Shadow Association recently began construction of a family healing center to support communities on the Crow Reservation. Executive Director Megan Doyle explains addiction and behavioral health issues can break apart families. She says children from the reservation are often sent to foster care families out of state when these issues arise. The center, called Kala's Village, aims to change that.
That's what Kala's Village is really trying to do, is provide this consistent and constant relationship and connection, and to help repair those places where connection and relationship are broken.
The center's approach is based in restorative justice, which aims to address the root cause of crimes instead of incarceration. Doyle says they hope to break cycles of abuse and trauma. Kala's Village was developed from years of direct dialogue between the nonprofit and Lodgegrass community members.
They really wanted it to be a safe place for them and for their children. And they also wanted to make sure that they were going to be surrounded by people who shared similar goals with them in recovery. So
the 13-acre campus will have housing along with a preschool and caretakers to help supervise the children. Doyle says they hope to fully open by the end of 2026. In Missoula, I'm Victoria Traxler.
Extreme heat can affect the health of pregnant mothers. As the Mountain West News Bureau's Yvette Fernandez reports, a new study shows the warming climate is adding to that risk, and several states in the Mountain West region are leading the way.
One of the most significant findings from the Climate Central study is that excessive exposure to heat can lead to premature births. The Policy Neutral Organization's Vice President of Science, Christina Dahl, says heat incidents can have lasting effects on the baby and the mother. It's exacerbated by their socioeconomic vulnerability. Air conditioning in areas that are experiencing hotter summers is important.
So people who have less access to cooling have, you know, less of an infrastructure around preventative health care, tend to be more at risk when it comes to extreme heat exposure.
Lower-income women are disproportionately affected. In our region, Utah experienced the most additional pregnancy heat risk days during the past 5 years. Overall, the study shows Nevada, Utah, Arizona, Colorado, and New Mexico experienced among the highest number of pregnancy heat risk days in the country. I'm Yvette Fernandez.
Navajo Highways, a new children's television series, is helping teach kids the Navajo language. The live-action puppet series follows the summer adventures of Sadie, a young girl from an urban background who spends time with her Navajo grandmother. Through the guidance of her family and community, she explores Navajo traditions, language, and values. Lori Tapahanso is a co-producer of the show.
It is a accompaniment to any kind of immersion program, but also a standalone language program that teaches children about culture and in a language in a fun and engaging way. It encourages families to learn together, but also children can learn on their own.
This series is written and directed by Pete Sands with support from the Navajo Nation and the New Mexico Public Education Department. The series will soon be featured on First Nations Experience's new streaming platform. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Climate change contributed to the Los Angeles fires. Drier vegetation and soil make it easier for wildfires to spread and become more destructive. Dr. Anthony Lizowitz has more of the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. In early January, the Palisades Fire erupted in the Santa Monica Mountains near Los Angeles, tearing through the neighborhood of Pacific Palisades. That same day, the Eaton Fire also roared to life, devastating nearby Altadena, California. These fires raged for weeks, killed dozens of people, destroyed thousands of homes, and forced more than 100,000 people to evacuate. it was one of the worst and most expensive fire events in U.S. history. And World Weather Attribution, a team of climate scientists, has found that the weather conditions that enabled those wildfires were made 35% more likely by climate change. Wildfires have always been a fact of life around Los Angeles. But as the planet warms, many places, including Southern California, are experiencing higher temperatures and more intense droughts. That can dry out vegetation and soils, making it much easier for wildfires to spread quickly and become more destructive. In recent decades, large fires have already become more common in much of the United States. And as the climate continues to warm, many parts of the country may suffer even more frequent and severe wildfires. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Monday, May 19th, 2025. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at our new phone number, 971-801-1378. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Lexis Ponce, Kenny B., Dejon, and Josh Salem. The producer is Hannah Francis, and our engineer is Althea Billings. Special thanks to Antonia Gonzalez, Isabel Charlet, Zamone Perez, and Alex Gonzalez. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath, and that's at 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Dave Johnson.
And I'm Sherry Meredith. Thank you for listening. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are made possible by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, go online to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News In Depth.